Blog Talk Radio.
It's that time. We have the people.
This is Eric from 911.
This is Priscilla Lima.
This is Tim Jensen with Pepperdine Volleyball.
The story in real time.
I can't argue that we're the best team in the world.
I'm not retiring, people.
You're listening to The Net Live with Barney.
If everyone was doing a great job, then everyone would win the championship every week.
Peter.
It's not kittens and candles all the time, guys.
Reed.
Where's Pretty? You promised me he'd be on the show today.
And DJ Rouché.
The baddest DJ in the land.
It's The Net Live right now.
Welcome, welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to The Net Live. We are back on the air on the 13th of December. I'm Kevin Barnett holding down the home court for one more day before it's off to San Antonio. Got with us on the air today live from Russia, as long as the internet holds out across the motherland, Reed Pretty, joining us fresh off the World Cup. Welcome, Reed.
Glad to be here. It's been a while. I like that intro. You kind of went old school for a second, and then you brought it back.
Yeah, I had all three of them up there, kind of old ones that we've had, new and test ones, clicking through them all. Without DJ Rouché, it's just a giant audio experiment here in the studio. So no DJ Rouché, no Chris Geeter-McGee, because he's at home building a fire out of broken furniture there in his apartment in Manhattan Beach. It's sort of a picture, I think, out of A Christmas Carol, where he's got Tiny Tim, a.k.a. Tiny Millie, and they're out of money. That would make Geeter Bob Cratchit. And he has to burn the furniture in order to heat the home, the family home, to keep people from freezing to death. Apparently the heat has been out at Geeter's. It has been cold here. And he said it's like, kind of like a meat locker in his place. So he's trying to get that taken care of for his family. And hopefully he does. We here have a great show for you. Lots to talk about. Of course, the Final Four set for women's volleyball. We're going to have Mike Sondheimer in here in just a second. We're going to break down the first few rounds and talk about the upcoming Final Four there in San Antonio. Going to be happening end of this week and this weekend. And the men's national team, we have Reed here. We'll talk to him about the sixth place finish of that team, what went on with that. I've now seen all the matches, and they have been on Universal Sports. Hopefully some of you out there have been watching. We also have a big issue going on with the AVP. Reed, your best buddy Nick Lewin just won't go away, despite the requests of so many people in the volleyball world. He keeps bringing himself back in new and more annoying ways. And so we'll talk a little bit about his lawsuit now against the city of Manhattan Beach and the Cuervo Tour. We'll have our old friend Dan Madden in to talk about some of the issues at hand, given that Dan works in that space with digital copyright issues and infringement, trademark infringement type things. So before we go much further, Reed, we want to get definitely to you, but we want to bring in Mike Sondheimer. He's been kind enough to join us here. And, Mike, you know, the music we have to play, I think, has to be for the highest remaining seed in the tournament.
They're the favorite.
And this is it. My home state, the most handsome coach in all the NCAA, Kevin Hambley, got it done and got his number three seeded Fighting Illini all the way to the Final Four. His team will face off against USC in the semis, the winner to face the winner of UCLA Florida State University. So this will count for our AVCA College Volleyball Weekly, and we have Mike Sondheimer here. Mike, give us your thoughts on the first couple of rounds here. I'm not sure that the seeding committee got it right or wrong based on who made the Final Four.
Well, I think there's so much in sports you have to rely on coaches. And I think the ABCA coaches and the ABCA coaches poll does a great job throughout the year. And I think somehow, some way, when the NCAA committee puts it together, that they have to go more on the coaches and more on head-to-head matchups and less on just RPI. Because I think if you look at the teams that have made it to the Volley Four in San Antonio, it falls a lot more on the ABCA poll than on the RPI seedings.
Yeah, that RPI, it seems to be a situation where the committee would have to educate itself in a more comprehensive manner if they were really to make the choices that were more in line with what the coaches would get at.
Well, if anybody watched the great ESPNU coverage and ESPN3 coverage over the first couple of weeks, there's no question the best match of the tournament was USC and Hawaii. That was a national championship caliber match, a great match that USC was able to pull out in five sets. And that match should not have been a regional semifinal. It could have been a regional final. It could have been NCAA semifinal. But that's one of the things you have to look at. I mean, there's been some nice upsets in the tournament, but you look at different things that have happened. Being three national champions in one bracket at Lexington, that's another tough thing. But the final four teams, everybody's got a shot at it, and USC is clearly the favorite. I mean, they've been battle-tested. When you go five sets with Hawaii and have to come back and gut it out with five sets of Pepperdine, you're ready to play and win a national championship. The other three teams are brand new, so it's going to be really up to them to not just be happy and get into San Antonio, but to try to win it.
Who's your biggest surprise of the tournament so far, whether they made the Final Four or not?
I think you have to look at Chris Poole and the great job he's done at Florida State. They're the first ACC team to ever make it to the NCAA semifinal. They went into a regional where you're going to have a tough situation where you got a home team, you know, Minnesota that's there. You have the Iowa State team that a lot of people didn't think belonged as number one seed, but Christy Johnson Lynch is as good a coach as there is in the country. And to be able to pull out that regional, when you look at Purdue, who a lot of people thought would be in the NCAA semis, they were the most consistent team throughout the nation. And Florida State went out and beat Purdue and then came back, went five, and beat Iowa State. So you have to give them a lot of credit for, you know, for doing it. They barely got by Cincinnati, 15-13 in the fifth and second round at home. So Chris Poole's team is also battle-tested going in.
Yeah, it seemed like that was one of the most competitive regions. You saw a lot of 3-2 matches.
Right.
And then you have to give
Mike Seeley a tremendous amount of credit at UCLA. I mean, to knock off Penn State one night, the team that had won 26 straight playoff matches, you know, came in, you know, ready to roll, and then to bounce back, you know, less than 24 hours later and knock out Jared Elliott in Texas, the number one overall seed in the tournament, which has an athletic team as there is in the country, you have to give him tremendous credit. And also give Kevin Hambly. I mean, his team was, you know, ready to play, and then they had to go back and play Florida on Florida's, you know, home court. So, I mean, Hambly, Poole, and Seeley, one of those three guys is definitely the ABCA Coach of the Year. They've had, you know, for me, tremendous jobs to get here, and you have to look at a body of work, and those three have done tremendous things. And then Mick Haley, what do you say? His team is there, and they believe that they're there to win it. They were there last year, so they're the one team that's coming back saying that they wanted to come back and win it. The other three teams are going to have to prove it to take it from USC.
Yeah, USC definitely felt like they should have been the number one seed for the entire tournament. They have at least proven that that could have been possible with their performance thus far.
Kevin, there's no way to put the Pac-12 champion and the Big Ten champion, Nebraska, in the same bracket, in my opinion. I mean, they're both conference champions, the two best conferences in the country, and to put them together was just, you know, just to me, it's just poor planning and the way things, you know, worked their way out. Yes, Nebraska may have lost the last match to Northwestern, but their body of work was outstanding in a top conference. And the biggest upset of the tournament, give credit to Susie Fritz and Kansas State for beating Nebraska at Nebraska. It's the first time since 1993 Nebraska is not in the Sweet 16, and that's far and away the biggest upset of the tournament.
Well, I think we have this discussion every year. We talk about the cost involved because they do only seed the top 16, and it creates some weird situations. Perhaps that may be the reason why you have a USC and a Nebraska in the same side of the bracket. And I just wonder what the cost difference would be. I mean, looking down at where people went for regionals, you had teams traveling all over the place. You had Pepperdine, USC, and K-State out in Hawaii. You had UCLA and Texas in Lexington. You had Illinois, Ohio State, and Michigan all going down to Gainesville, and don't tell me they drove. Minneapolis was probably the closest one that had Florida State obviously traveling far, but then Purdue and Iowa State probably taking the cars. It just doesn't seem like there's that big a difference in money, even when you go all the way through the entire field of 64. Really, for the size of this sport, the amount of support that this sport gets, the amount of athletes that are in it, it would make sense to seed the entire thing.
Well, they're not quite there yet. I wish they were, like women's basketball is, and they have to look at the 400-mile radius, what schools can drive the schools, which is why you get, you know, teams that might be in the top 25 ending up playing at one place and teams not ranked anywhere, you know, playing at another place. And it just kind of works out that way. They can see the first 16 and try to balance it off. I would like to see them go a little bit more in depth and look at it, you know, in terms of driving versus flying and what the actual costs are. But that's how you end up with two Colorado teams in Hawaii in the first two rounds and two Oklahoma teams at USC in the first two rounds. It's weird stuff. But they're looking at all the costs and where people can fly and what places they can go to, and it just kind of, you know, balances out that way. And unfortunately, a tournament draws 100,000. When it starts drawing 200,000 and making that much more money, then maybe they can seed 64 teams.
Well, I'd like to see them do a cost analysis of had it been seeded. I want to see them seeded all the way 64, seed it 16, let it play out, and I want them to do the analysis on it, which I doubt they are actually doing, because I don't think anyone wants to study it that much. They want to just hold it to that, oh, we need X number of dollars to make it profitable, when in fact the difference we're talking about is probably a much smaller number if you were to subtract the actual costs from the tournament as it is now versus the theoretical costs if you were to seed all of them. I think it's a much smaller number and a much different discussion.
Well, it's the same kind of discussion, though, and women's soccer with 64 teams in the same boat where you see four West Coast teams all in the same kind of regional bracket, and see the same thing in men's soccer where they try to balance it out the same way. And unfortunately, that's where those sports are, because the sports that make money right now are football and basketball at the majority of programs. And at least the women's basketball tournament is seeded out 1-64, and they move teams around and try to do things that way. There's some great things, you know, for this year. I mean, this is the first time ever that four regional host schools make it to the NCAA semifinals, which I think is pretty amazing. I went back and looked at some stats I'm doing for ESPN. This is the first time there were two five-set regional finals since 2004, and really, you know, since the first time since 84 in the second time in history, all four regional teams didn't have one team sweep. That's how close it was. All four regionals were 1-1 after the second set, and that's the period we talked about all year on the show that the ABC coaches know about. That's why we had six number one teams so far in the ABCA coaches poll all year. And that's good for volleyball and good for the sport, that you can go to a place and have a chance to compete for an NCAA championship in more than one or two schools.
I think definitely the trajectory of this sport is positive. Over the last few years, we've had some great finals, some great matches, increased attention, definitely going in the right direction, but perhaps just not in time for my patience level with what's happening with the NCAA and support of this sport in particular.
Disappointment is really that Texas, unfortunately, is not going to be in San Antonio, which means the crowd will be good, but it could have been great. Texas, I mean, 85 miles from Austin to San Antonio, and Texas would have brought an army of people to come and support the Longhorns, and that's just unfortunate.
Yeah, then you start getting into the bowl championship series discussion of teams that travel well, and you look at like a Nebraska. You saw a ton of Nebraska fans last Final Four because they were already there. They had tickets. They still wanted to come and watch some great volleyball. It would have been nice
exactly.
to have that team travel well down there to Austin or down there to San Antonio along with the fans from Austin. That would have set up definitely a sellout situation for the finals. Let's talk about
this. It's going to be awesome. And you look at like Player of the Year and Coach of the Year and all those awards and people, you know, pushing through. But I think the one person that established himself as the Player of the Year is Alex Jupiter. I don't know if you got to see set five against Hawaii, but she was responsible for the 9 of 15 points that USC got in that set five, and she carried them. And that was a Player of the Year performance that nobody else has seen all year in the country do.
Yeah, I heard Alex Jupiter's name a whole bunch while the USC was just squeaking by number 15, Pepperdine, my alma mater, after taking the first set, losing the next two to Pepperdine, then managed to get and five.
Yeah, Nana Matthews just did a tremendous job with that team this year, senior freshman based team, and they were that close. They were right there. They could have won, you know, set four, potentially done it, and, you know, similar to Hawaii. Hawaii could have won, you know, the set that they lost against USC, they could have done it, and Hawaii-Pepperdine would have been an amazing final.
All right, so our final four matchups are UCLA versus Florida State University, and then Illinois versus USC. This sets up a potential Zoolander situation where you could have Mike Seeley and his black mock turtle facing off against the most handsome man in volleyball, Kevin Hambley in Illinois. Who are your picks here in these last two matches?
Well, I think you have to look at UCLA Florida State as being really a toss-up. Florida State, Chris Poole's got the most unique system. They run a 6-2. They've given teams really fit the first time they played. But UCLA has done a great job beating Texas and Penn State, so I think the Bruins have maybe a slight edge over Florida State. Now, Kevin Hambley may have a higher-seeded team, but Mick Haley's team, I just think there's karma going. I think USC has it. They've been battle-tested in separate matches. They were the number one team on the ABCA poll, And I think they will beat Illinois, and I think they will beat UCLA or Florida State in the finals right now. I think you have to go with the team and the player of the year, Alex Jupiter, Kendall Bateman, the best setter right now in the country. And ESPN2 will have it all. We have it live at 6 and 8:30 on the basically Midwest time, 7, 9:30 on that, and the finals will be at 8:30 Eastern time on Saturday. And, you know, Beth Mullins, Chris M, Karch Karai doing the matches. And I think it's just going to be great that there's live TV and a chance to watch the best in volleyball. And whatever it is this year, Kevin, next year the top teams will be so much better. Recruiting has gone well. Almost all the top players at all the top schools are back. So volleyball this year was a parity. Next year there's going to be some super teams.
Just full disclosure, in the interest of full disclosure on this program, Mike Sonheimer is contractually obligated to pick UCLA in all matches that he prognosticates upon. So I'll trust
you. I'm supposed to be able to do that, yes. I'm back for ESPN, so I'm going to try to stay as neutral as possible. But hopefully, you know, we'll see what happens with the Bruins. But also, I mean, Al Skates back at the ABCA convention on his 50 years in volleyball, so there'll be a lot of Bruins back there. But Trojans are going to be back there in force. Something we came up with, a couple of interesting stats. I mean, Bob Yoder's daughter, Erin, player for USC, we're trying to figure out for the viewers out there, how many times has somebody ever, like, you know, played in the NCAA championship, won an NCAA championship, coached a championship, and had a daughter who won an NCAA championship? I haven't been able to find anybody else who can do that. And then if Mike Seeley wins, he'd be the first person to win as an NCAA championship men's player and then win as a women's head coach. So if anybody can find other people that have fit that, I would love to have that stat for ESPN, but that's what we're looking at right now.
Oh, very interesting. Yeah, Mike Seeley, former teammate of mine professionally over in Belgium and a time on the national team. Really, what he's done with UCLA this year is absolutely remarkable. He and Joy McKenzie, really exciting stuff for UCLA, really returning to what it used to be.
Yeah, no, definitely. Dan O'Dell's done a great job, too. I mean, added in the staff, Dan Connors went to Nebraska late, and Dan O'Dell's been just outstanding. You have 4 years, 4 year finalists for Penn State, and that O'Dell family, tremendous in volleyball back there. And it had to be something special for him to be a UCLA assistant coach and beat Penn State and Russ Rose.
Well, Mike, we appreciate you coming on here. We will see you down in San Antonio in just a couple of days. Looking forward to the matches coming up December 15th at 7 p.m. and 9 p.m. That's local Central Standard Time. And then we have December 17th at 8:30 p.m. That's Saturday. That'll be the final in the national championship. Mike's on.
1,000 coaches at the ABCA convention. So if you want to see volleyball and meet volleyball celebrities and people, come on out. It'll be great.
Fantastic. Thanks, Sandy. We look forward to seeing you, and thanks for the whole
year. See you in San Antonio.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Mike Sonheimer from UCLA. It's also bringing to the conversation now, Reed, we still have you on the line. We also have Brandon Rosenthal calling in. He's going to be in San Antonio. He's going to be helping to host our special convention blowout show, which is going to be happening on Friday from 2 to 5 p.m. There, it's Central Time, 2 to 5, so that would be noon to 3 back here on the West Coast, and Brandon will be in-house. Rose, any thoughts on what Sandy just had to say? Your thoughts on the Final Four here? You have Hambly, good guy. You've got USC and Mick Haley, the old veteran, and FSU, Chris Poole, who we talked to just before we ended his streak with the NetLive curse, and then, of course, Mike Seeley in UCLA.
Well, first of all, you know, I'm heading down to San Antonio really just to collect my moderately priced dinner that you owe me. So, I mean, that's really the number one reason I'm going down there.
Okay, so I visited Lipscomb a few weeks ago for the ASUN Championship. Had an opportunity to hang out with Brandon Rosenthal for a while. He told me that I could not hit a home run, hit a ball out of the park on the Lipscomb baseball field. I told him I'd already done it years before at Pepperdine, and it was no problem. Little did I know, and he didn't tell me until the moderately priced meal was already on the table, that the bats have been changed. The bats have been deadened. And for that matter, haven't they altered the ball too? So he gets me out there. I get 100 swings, and I get an opportunity to hit a home run. I need to go 330 to left field. And I went about 325, bounced it off the bottom of the wall, could not get it over the wall, so I'm on the hook.
Yeah, and that's what we call warning track power. I mean, great athlete, just couldn't get it done that day. So, but yeah, I'm looking forward to San Antonio. You know, it's an exciting time. I think you've referred to it as the NBA All-Star Weekend. It's a great time. It's kind of interesting as coaches go. You know, for 6 months, January through end of June, beginning of July, we see each other almost every weekend. and great camaraderie. And then literally through July, you know, till the Final Four, we don't see each other at all. So it's kind of a, you know, we stay up, you know, in contact with each other, whether it's through phone calls or Facebook or, you know, texting or whatever. But, you know, we really don't get to see much of each other unless we play. And then it becomes one of those, you know, you can be friendly for about a couple hours, but you got to get down to business. So it's exciting, you know, from the coaching standpoint. I think Sandy mentioned it. It's a neat place, the networking that goes on. You know, there's a lot of side stories when we talk about the Final Four. The matches are, you know, obviously why we're there, but the networking and the job process that goes on is also a huge portion of what that convention is all about.
Yeah, a lot of people looking to switch jobs, assistant coaches looking to move to head positions, heads looking to move over to different programs. It's an interesting place to be, and really kind of cool to see the camaraderie, as you mentioned, between the coaches and people getting an opportunity to know each other off the floor, not just yelling at each other across some clipboards across the gym.
Yeah, you know, and then the other part of it, too, is the you get all these clinics or sessions where you can kind of dive into a little bit of what some of these successful coaches have really done to their programs, and whether it's, you know, how do you block slides, or, you know, what do you do on recruiting trips and things like that. It's, you know, it's interesting to hear different takes, and I think if you go with an open mind and this ability to, you know, set aside your pride and say, hey, I'm willing to learn, and I want to take from, you know, Russ Rose, or I want to take from Jared Elliott, or I want to take from Nina Mathis, and kind of just take these different ideas and put them into your program. I think it's a great opportunity to, you know, like you said, network, but also learn, especially for young coaches, you know, such as myself, haven't been in it forever. You know, there's a ton to learn, and I think that willingness to say, okay, hey, I don't know everything, you know, let me, you know, while we've been successful, let me learn from these people that have been even more successful.
Yeah, definitely the biggest gathering of volleyball coaching talent in the world. You mentioned some of the current coaches, but you also see a Terry Pettit will be there. You'll have Doug Beal, U.S. national team head coach. You'll have our former national team head coach. You'll have Hugh McCutcheon, current women's national team head coach, is usually there. Karch, of course, is there broadcasting and talking in sessions and as his position as the assistant coach. There's just so much information out there. And this isn't just an indoor thing. There are several beach clinics going on, CAP courses for beach, and a whole setup inside the convention center. This is really almost a volleyball festival, not just the Final Four. The AVCA convention is really something to behold as far as the amount of information available to coaches and anyone who wishes to attend. If you're simply a volleyball enthusiast and you want to show up, there's also a tremendous amount of vendors there. If you want to learn more about the volleyball-only vendors that are starting to crop up there, or see the volleyball lines for different places, Volleyball Magazine will be there for their 35th anniversary. They're hosting a party. There's a lot of different things going on. Really a fantastic event. I'm looking forward to getting back there again. This will be my second trip to that event following last year's in Kansas City. So a little bit warmer. I'm not sure if it'll be quite as spread out, but it'll be great.
Rose, yeah, called, you know, My no-co policy will be definitely in effect, you know, for San Antonio. I don't know if I'll need one.
You nearly got pneumonia after last year. All right, give us your picks here. UCLA, Florida State, who's going to the finals?
You know, I think Sealy's got something going. And I think they've kind of been in that pack 12 mix all year long, but kind of overlooked. I think that they're going to go. I think Chris Poole has done a fantastic job, but I think Sealy's got something special going on with that team, and they truly believe, and, you know, I put them in the final.
I wonder if Sealy can wear the black scarf that he wore last year legitimately. It won't be that cold. Illinois versus USC on the other side.
You know, I'm going to go a different way than Sandy. I'm going to go Illinois.
Oh.
I think they've been battle-tested you know, with their conference. I think that Hambly is doing a fantastic job. You know, obviously earlier in the year they hit that number one spot, and then I think you know, like a lot of teams, they had to go through losing something and trying to figure out who they were. And so I like where they're at in that sense of really getting tested in the middle of the year and kind of figuring it all out. And I know Mick is doing a great job, and you know, obviously a great, you know, tournament experience for them. But I think Illinois, UCLA in the final, the battle, as you call it, the Zoolander battle, which I think is fantastic. Two of the best dressed guys, you know, in the coaching business. And yeah, I think it will be a great final.
I'm looking forward to the pose-off that could occur right before that. Someone's going to go blue steel right off the bat. So 7 p.m. Thursday, 9 p.m. Thursday for the semifinals. Those are going to be on TV. And then 8:30 on Saturday, all this on ESPN. Definitely tune in and check it out. So that's the story with the NCAAs. We will be heading down there. The Net Live will be present, heading down on tomorrow morning, and then going to be doing a show on Friday from 2 to 5 p.m. Brandon Rosenthal will be sitting in. Perhaps Reed will be calling in, although I think it's the middle of the night for him. We'll have a whole bunch of great guests going on. We're going to try and get all the coaches that are involved in the Final Four. Of course, we'll have the two losers and the two winners out of the semifinal. Hopefully, we'll get a chance to speak to everybody, in addition to a whole variety of other coaches. I'm trying to get you some people from different levels, folks that have been there a long time, folks that are just climbing up now, people with some interesting stories to tell about the world of volleyball and coaching volleyball. That and certainly some sponsors and other things. Right after that, if you're going to be in San Antonio, we're going to hold the NetLive Mizuno Trivia Shootout. It's going to happen right after the show in the convention center. Going to finish it out there on Friday night. It'll be a 64-person trivia slam down, and the winner's going to take home an iPad 2, courtesy of Mizuno. So there's a real prize on the line. I'm sorry, Brandon Rosenthal, because of your affiliation and all the payments you've received for co-hosting this program and being a part of it, you are not eligible for the Trivia Slam Down. But maybe you can use all the money we've paid you to buy your own iPad, too.
Well, I'm going to need a lot more money than that, because $0 equals no iPad for me.
Reed Pretty, I know you are working on the trivia questions. How are those coming along? What should people be studying?
Oh, all over the gamut. You know, we've got I solicited some help from some of our loyal listeners that have contributed. And I've got my little sister in on it as well, contributing. We've got, you know, a wide array, I should say, of questions. So you can't really study. You're just going to have to know. Wikipedia actually is a good place to start. Just Wikipedia volleyball, NCAA championships. Study up on record holders and such.
All right. Another person ineligible who will not be present but who's been on the line for a little while, and I was trying to remember what the number was. It's Chris McGee from the Meat Locker, 60 degrees. He's unfrozen the electronics and joined us. Hello, Geeter.
Hi, guys. How are you, Kevin?
I'm good. Have you taken your family to the local shelter, or have you gotten the heat back on at your place?
It's been at our place the last 3 days. We've had no heat, so literally the house is 60. We got a couple of little floor heaters that people have given us, and Millie's not doing well. 104 temp last two days, up to down. So we were at the ER late last night and stuff like that. So it's been a rough go around the house, and I've had to work a lot, so it's been tough on the wife. I'm not gonna lie to you.
Yeah, it seems like this new Fox job is pretty much eating you alive. You've been very busy with all the happenings here. Signing of Albert Pujols, trading of Lamar Odom, then the not trading of Lamar Odom, then the retrading of Lamar Odom. There's a lot for you to cover.
It's been kind of crazy, and being full-time, you know, they can kind of send you anywhere and anytime. And, you know, Saturday was all put aside for championship football, but we had to be at Angel Stadium in the morning for the Pujols signing and C.J. Wilson. So that was a long day, but it was cool to be a part of that kind of stuff. And, yeah, we're on hold. That's why I can't go to San Antonio. We have apparently, Laker interviews on Thursday and Friday. I think they're thinking something's going to go down. I'm not sure what. Mitch Kupchak met with us all yesterday and talked about the Lamar Odom trade, and he demanded it and was not happy about the original Chris Paul trade, so he went in and demanded a trade. And Lamar still hasn't talked to anybody but Luke Walton, and he's pretty upset. So it's been a little crazy and, of course, dramatic around Lakerland like it always is.
I love how these guys get upset when the offer to trade them is out there and it doesn't work. Guys, it's a business.
Yeah.
You can be traded. That's the whole deal. I mean, that's,
yeah,
that's of the business. I don't understand getting so angry with your team for making a business out of it.
And you know, it's tough for us in the volleyball world to realize this when guys are getting paid $9 million a year and they don't want to show up to work. I mean, the one thing you got to respect about Pau Gasol is he was not happy. He was devastated as well, but he did show up, and he's putting in his work, and he doesn't know if he's going or not. It sounds like he might not go now. So he's just, you know, obviously you're sensitive, and you get a little, you know, the pride gets hurt. But at the end of the day, Barney, you're getting paid a lot of money, and us in the volleyball world know that. It's always, I always shake my head when I hear about these numbers that these guys are getting.
Yeah, it's all about perspective, though, and you lose that perspective. We often would talk about on the national team, oh, what if we could have a team in Buffalo? You know, you take less money to go to Buffalo. And I said, you know what, within 3 years, people who had no clue what it was like to travel over to Russia to play would be complaining about having to go to Buffalo. So it's just a matter of perspective. And these guys, you know, the money is whatever the money is, and that's their own only experience is that they get paid that way. They don't really have the ability to rationalize what real life might look like for many of those athletes in the NBA, which would include staffing a mobile station. You know, there's just no perspective as to what the real world looks like outside
of that. Without a doubt. Without a doubt. How about the regionals, huh? Are you guys talking about that with Brandon a little bit?
Yeah, we talked with Brandon. We talked with Sondheimer. We were talking about whether the rankers got it right. Did the selection committee get it right? Because number one, number two, number four, number five, number six, number eight are all gone.
Yeah.
You have no of three. You have 3, 7, 9, and 12 in the final four. So,
well, Kevin,
I'm not thinking they got it right.
Kevin, you know, one of the things that we talk about is the rankers. I mean, it's a computer, so it's hard to even talk about this without, you know, saying, all right, do we look at this formula a little bit more? And you know, this formula is being used across the board at the NCAA, and it sounds great, but, you know, you're right. It's not... I don't know if it's necessarily a volleyball formula.
Yeah, I don't know.
You know what?
Come up with a volleyball formula that would work just on its own. Geeter, go ahead.
Yeah, you know, I would like to see the RPI used along with the human poll, the coach's poll. I think it should be a combination. There's no question about it. But, you know, I think a lot of it was right, now that we look at it. And this happens in NCAA basketball all the time. I mean, it's what we do, and Barney, we talked about it in the last show. It's what we do the week before the tournament. You complain about the seedings and the matchups.
Right.
And you know, so many times we look ahead in bracket play to, oh, my God, look what that Hawaii regional is going to look like. Look what this is going to look like. And then it doesn't happen. This team, you know, one thing we learned is, and we learned it last year too, you know, hey, yeah, the Pac-10, which is last year, the Pac-12 this year, there are some great teams, obviously, in SC and UCLA, but this year they were down the other teams. And that's just a fact. But they were ranked in the top 10 all year. So, you know, is it one of the best conferences? Of course it is. But, you know, one thing you can tell is there are great teams everywhere, you know, and there's parity across the board. You know, do I think Northern Iowa should have been a top 5 seed or 6 seed, whatever they were? Absolutely not, I don't. I look at their schedule and I just don't see it. I don't see 3 teams from their conference getting in and only 2 from the WCC getting in. I just don't think it's right. But, you know, we can complain about it all day long, but at the end of the day, when you get to tournament play, you look at a team like Mike Seeley, who wasn't playing well at the end of the year, get hot, and here they are in the Final Four. You know, you look at a team like Pepperdine, who I think was the surprise of the tournament and literally had a great chance at a national championship. They gave SC all they could handle. You know, so at the end of the day, you got to get out there and play no matter what your seed is.
Yeah, I think,
you know,
people's frustration is that the RPI seems to be the only thing that's in consideration, to the point where the AVCA doesn't even put out a poll at the very end. They don't even bother.
Exactly.
It doesn't appear like it's been watched at all. You have the team that's ranked number 1 put all the way down to 7 and then delivers by going to the Final Four. I think that's a problem. And there's definitely faults with both, because I think that some of the coaches' poll rests on reputation rather than a computation. And I think you could put those together to come up with a little bit better result when you're talking about ranking 1 through 10.
Yeah, I think, like, Northern Iowa being ranked ahead of SC and UCLA, I just think that's – I just don't think it's right. I mean, SC should have been a top 4 seed.
Definitely. Brandon Roosevelt, you had a thought.
Yeah, I mean, I think Russ Rose said it on the selection show, and I think this is a really interesting way to look at the tournament. It, you know, you talk about it being a 64-team tournament, but, you know, kind of in conjunction with what Gita said about UCLA, it's really a 16 tournament. You know, you've got to win six matches. And you don't have to beat all 64. You just got to beat the six teams that you, you know, potentially face. And, you know, what I love to hear from coaches, and I've been on the other side of this. I was one of those coaches that was complaining about my draw and this, that, and the other. At the end of the day, you can't do anything about the draw. You got to go and play. And beyond that, you got to go and win. If you want to make any sort of statement, the complaining and all that, you know, before the tournament, it means nothing unless you can actually win and go deep into the tournament. And I think, you know, you're talking about 64 teams, okay? You get past that first round. Now you're talking about 32. At some point, you're going to have to play good teams.
And you know what, Barney? Sorry.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I think I'm just saying I
completely agree with Brandon, and Russ made that mention, and it just shows what happens when you win four national championships. He said that exact thing that Brandon said, like, when it gets down to it, I don't even think about the draw and who we're playing. And you know, I talk to Nine and Tim a lot because obviously I see them. Tim and I coach together, and we talk, you know, on a daily basis. And one thing I loved about their attitude was they were excited about the possibility when the draw came out of going to the Hawaii Regional. When everyone was complaining about regionals and this and that, their thought was, wow, Nebraska, possibly Hawaii, SC, and us, that's where you want to be as program if you're Pepperdine. You know, that was a great mindset, and their kids had that mindset also, and it showed. I think when you start complaining a lot about your senior draw, then I think it carries over to the kids possibly. You know, SC spun it like, hey, we got a lot to prove, and we're disrespected. So that was a good way for them to spin it. You know, I mean, you got to use it to your advantage if you can.
I think you make a good point. I think also that Brandon makes a fine point, and this is something I had to learn in my own career. You can't worry too much about the things you can't control. You get into some of these situations, whether it's a professional team or the national team or your college team or whatever the situation is, and some of the stuff just sucks. The travel plans stink. You're getting delayed. You're having problems. The more you worry about those issues, the less effective you're going to be at your job, which is playing, or your job, which is coaching. In this case, I think you're absolutely right, Gear, that translates over to your kids.
Yeah.
And I, you know, Pepperdine, they had to be pleased to go to Hawaii just because you're not going to Minneapolis in December.
Yeah.
You're going to Hawaii in December. So be stoked, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I'm around those kids and around Tim Lund. I don't know if I've ever seen a team that dialed in and that excited about playing that. You know, for SC, obviously, they had pressure. And, you know, so did Hawaii being at home, and so did Kansas State, and so did Pepperdine. I mean, no matter what, when you're in that position, when those balls are in the air, hey, there's pressure on everybody, and the draw, I always spin it like, what a bad draw for them.
Right.
You know,
right. They have to play us.
I think that's the way you got to look at it.
They have to play us. It's not a good draw for them.
I think Jensen might be in the queue, too.
Oh, he might be, huh? All right, well, we'll come back and talk to Jensen. Reed, I know you're going to be able to hang in there for a little while. You got a Sprite and 7 going?
No. No, game day tomorrow, so... But no, I'm hanging. Great, good stuff, all you guys.
Hi, Reed.
Hey, how you doing, Geeter?
I'm very upset. I got to be honest and jealous that I'm not going to San Antonio. I feel like everyone I know is going, and I'm a little hurt by it. I'm not going to lie to you. I'm not going to sugarcoat it, and I'm not going to lie on the air in front of our millions of fans.
Well, you had every opportunity, Geeter. Let's just remember
yeah.
that.
Work yeah. balls, buddy.
You had a chance. We had you sponsored. We had Tim Kelly and Bring It USA all lined up to bring us. Chris Geeter McGee brought to you by.
Yeah, that's not really the answer I was looking for out of you guys. I'm well aware of that. That's why I'm upset.
All right. Hey, hang in there, Geeter, for a couple more minutes. This is the Net Live. We're going to be right back. We'll have Tim Jensen from Pepperdine. We're going to have Reed Pretty recap the World Cup for us. And a big discussion going on with the AVP and their suing of Manhattan Beach. This is the Net Live. Right back.
As the AVCA convention draws closer, it continues to be the place where the stars of volleyball connect. On December 16th at 8 p.m. Eastern, San Antonio's Alamo Dome will light up as the top 24 seniors of girls high school volleyball will take the court in the 2011 Under Armour All-American Match and Skills Competition. Admission is complimentary to convention attendees, and tickets will be available for under $15 at both Ticketmaster.com and the Alamo Dome box office. The match will air on ESPNU on December 26th at 7 p.m. Eastern. Support the future stars of the sport and make plans to watch or attend this exciting event.
Welcome back into the Net Live here on the VolleyballNetwork.com. Appreciate you being here. I want to say much thanks to Hurley, to Volleyball Magazine for sponsoring our show. We're going to have a new sponsor coming on board in January, the Spire Institute. Fantastic. Mizuno, thanks to them, they're going to be sponsoring the Net Live Mizuno Trivia Shootout coming up on Friday. It's going to be right after the show live in the convention hall. It's going to be a fantastic event, a lot of fun. We're looking forward to giving away an iPad 2 at the end of that. And, of course, the AVCA and their support, bringing us in for their big convention event. Got Kevin Barnett here holding down the home court. Reed Pretty on from Russia, and Chris McGee from his car somewhere around L.A. because it's warmer than his house. So I want to bring in our guest, our first guest of today. We've got Tim Jensen of Pepperdine, his Pepperdine Waves. And he and head coach Nina Matthews guided them. Oh, and Marcio Ciccoli, don't forget him, Marcio. Guided the Waves to the Elite Eight and came so close to making the Final Four. I was even willing to interrupt my watching of The Walking Dead to listen in on the match as they went up 2-1 after dropping set number one but could not get it done just in five. Got edged by USC. Welcome to the program again, Tim Jensen. Tim.
Thanks, Bonnie. Really appreciate it.
Oh, dude, thanks for checking in with us. That was a really tough match you guys had against USC. Talk about getting your team back from a 25-16 first set.
You know, I've got to give most of that credit. It's got to go to head coach Nina Matthews. She was in such a great place all along, so excited about being there and keeping the kids nice and relaxed. And, you know, get her clear. We were not just happy to be there. We were spinning it that, hey, we have just as good of a chance as anybody at national championship. And our girls actually believed they were due, you know, they were going to beat SC the entire time. And our preparations prior to it, there was any fear on anybody's, you know, face. And you could see at practice, we were relaxed. I got some great advice from friends who had been there before on how to go about it. And, you know, you expect SC to come out and kind of put it to us on that first game. And we're looking at them going, wow, everyone says how great they are and this or that. But once we settled in, game two under our belt, we felt great.
Now, Mike Sonheimer was on this program earlier, talked about the play of Alex Jupiter. It seemed like she was key down the stretch for USC in your match as well.
Both the Hawaii match and our match, when she decided to go, when they needed something, she did. You know, they're a good team, but rather one-dimensional, and that dimension is pretty special when it's her. So you got to, you know, come in. We had the ball in our hands a lot of the time. We got a lot of soft touches, a lot of good things from our defense. I think we had 103 digs, something like that. So, you know, she changed the course of the game, and I'd imagine, you know, that she's going to do that against Illinois. It'll be interesting to see how the rest of her supporting cast can carry the load around her.
What did you guys need if you're going to pull out that SC match? What was the stat that you guys needed, or the couple of plays you needed to go your way?
We needed to win the serving battle, and, you know, in games 1 and 5, we didn't do that. In games 2, 3, and 4, I thought we did do that. And 4, you know, we got the ball in our hands, and maybe we just didn't put it away. I mean, we got the dig, soft touches, as I said, and, you know, SC put up some good blocks. They made some great digs, too. They entered some on digs, so, you know, when it gets to that point and each kid is dying to be in the Final Four and each kid is given everything that they have, you got to and you got to have a little bit of luck, and maybe they had just a tad bit more in game 4 and 5 than we did.
So for you now and the Pepperdine Waves, you guys will go to convention. Will you guys be there?
Oh, yeah. Nana and Marcio are presenting some beach stuff, as you were talking about earlier. We'll all be there. We got, to be there. There's mentions, all that good stuff. So we'll be there for a few days. We'll watch the Final Four, and then I'll come, Barney, because it's been enough volley now. And you still, no matter how you slice it, everyone is so, wonderful in terms of their notes and their emails to us as a program about what a great run. But up 2-1 in the fourth, it hurts.
So how much have you guys already started talking about next season? I imagine it has to go about 10 minutes on the match at hand, and then you start already having that creep into next year, the spring season, the fall.
Right on the head. I mean, hit it right on the head. We were out having dinner afterward. The first question, what do we got to do next year to get back, and how do we, keep this going? And for us, the program was there a lot earlier, and then we took a little hiatus. The tournament, we had a meeting, Nina and I had a meeting last year, how to get the culture back to that way, and we think we've figured that out. Obviously, we proved it on the court. But we will just dive back into, time in the weight room, spending a lot of time in the spring doing both beach and indoor. The seniors have helped create a culture around Pepperdine that, we had three seniors, three freshmen on the floor almost at all times, with a sophomore and a junior mixed in there. For us, it's not like it was a flash in the pan. The core group will be back. We had some young kids. Kelly Woolover, our setter, Sam Cash, who was absolutely unstoppable. I mean, SC had an answer for her. She's a freshman, and those kids will all be back. And we are already talking about what we're for next year.
Talk about how much the level of the WCC matters and those conference matches that you will play, in particular, I think, of San Diego, but how important that is in your preparation for a run like you had to the Elite Eight?
It's pretty important. The WCC is a conference, and it got no respect. There's some conferences out there. I have been involved in college volleyball for going on 13 years now, and all those conferences are fantastic. I think the WCC is better than, say, the Missouri Valley, the games than we did. It's sort of atrocious, the fact that a team like St. Mary's is left the only team that beat us in conference. There's a team like San Francisco who's really good in separate from injuries, and they struggled. We were battle-tested, and also went out in the preseason and tried to go and do what the selection committee wanted us to do. I mean, we're out, we're traveling, we're playing at Dayton, we're playing Florida State, we're playing Michigan, and we lost 2019. In game five, we beat Dayton. We're at Hawaii, Texas. We're doing all the things everybody wants us to do. And if you put that with the WCC matches, you're ready to go. We felt totally ready to play in that, fully ready. And when the brackets came out, everyone was talking about the regional deaths. That's because we were in it, not because all the rest of those teams. We were ready to go. And I think people need to look a little bit harder at the WCC and what they do and the teams that they and battle with, and give them more credit. There's some great teams, some great coaches. Brent Hillier did amazing. Rob Browning at St. Mary's, John Wallace. He's already been to a Final Four. And he'll have that team back to where they're at. WCC is a real deal. People need to understand that.
Well, and be honest, you were very excited you were in the Hawaii event and not in the Minneapolis event.
Oh, God, yes. do the math. 28 degrees in Minnesota or 75-80 in Hawaii. There was a morning after we won the 16, I woke up, got a coconut coffee, 7:15 in the morning, and Gattuzzi was about 75 out, and I'll gear up and we had a little chat about things. You're not in Minnesota. You're doing that in Hawaii.
Yeah, I think I've read a stat that says the lowest temperature ever recorded in Honolulu is something close to 53. All right, Jason, give us picks here. UCLA, FSU, Illinois, USC.
Well, so you figure out the final four teams. We played three of them. We beat UCLA. We beat Florida. Went 5-5. I've seen Illinois, know the coaches real well. I'm going to tell you, UCLA, for as much respect as I have for State, UCLA to win that game. Seeley's got that team going. Rachel Kidder is an absolute beast right now. I think they win that in three. And then this USC-Illinois match is going to be interesting. SC's been old. The coaching staff has been there. You know, Mick knows what he's doing in these times. Illinois, they got some matchups that could cause SC some problems. I'm going to give another, and I'm going to give it to Coach Hamley. I mean, and I we're going to see UCLA Illinois final, and Coach Seeley with the new short haircut is going to he's going to win his national championship. That's my call.
Oh, giving us UCLA as the national champion.
Yeah, as much as it hurts, it's good I say that because then I can go around telling everybody, yeah, we'd beat the national championship. So that's good for that. Right, that well.
How much credit are you going to give to Joy McKenzie versus to Mike Seeley in that?
You know, everybody who knows volleyball knows it's all Joy, but we all have to give Mike his due, you know. But, you know, they got a great staff. You can't take anything away from any of them. I don't know Dan O'Dell well. But he seems to be the mellowest of the crew, which is scary thinking of that crew. That is a really mellow crew there. But they got style. They got a little panache. I mean, you gotta love that right there. I mean, put that staff, and then you put that staff against the staff of Florida State Pool, and then his assistant, who's been with a long time. I forget her name, but she's extreme. And you got their European staff member who's up and about and really aggressive. That'll be an interesting coach's fight. It would be interesting to put those guys in a cage match, a WWF sort of, or MMA cage match. Those three versus those three, that would be fun to watch.
Listen, you know, Seeley is not one of the wrestlers, though. Seeley is definitely a manager if he's in the WWF. He's definitely like Paul Bearer or something. I mean,
you can't have Seeley in there. Joy will lead that charge in the WWF. I mean, she's one of all of them, for sure.
All right, well, Tim Jensen, thanks so much for joining us. Congratulations on what was a great season. I know you guys wanted to go to the Final Four, but really a fantastic result, good run to the Elite Eight, and I know you're looking forward to next season, even though you want a little bit of a break for a couple of weeks from the Volleyverse.
Break, Barney, but, yeah, we are ready for next season. You know, the waves are back, and we'll be around, and I appreciate the Net Live and for the sport, and, you know, you guys, all your support of Pepperdine and everybody and anything you need, you guys know we're there for you, too.
Thanks, Timmy. I appreciate that you make Chris Geeter-McGee cheer for the Waves. We'll see you.
All right, bud. You take
care.
Bye-bye.
All right, Tim Jensen from Pepperdine, assistant coach there under Nina Matthews. Incredible run for the Pepperdine Waves. And Geeter, I want to see you in orange and blue, baby. I want to see you in front of the TV wearing the big
shirt. You know, I got to tell you, Barney, it was such a good interview by you that I didn't have to jump in for the first time in our careers together.
Well, since you've been gone, I've been forced to step up my game.
Yeah, and what would have happened, and our friends were doing this behind Jarrett and Tim's back, if Texas played Pep for the national championship? I mean, for a minute there, we thought, wow, if Texas beats UCLA, they're going to get Florida State or Iowa State, and if Pep wins, you know, I mean, we were thinking maybe national championship, those two square off. What were the friends going to do? I mean, everybody flies to San Antonio, but what colors do you wear?
Here's what would have happened for you. If you've ever seen the super fans, when Mike Ditka went to the New Orleans Saints, and they were forced to wear the half Saints, half Bears outfits this year for both teams, that would have been you, half burnt orange and half orange and blue glory. That would have been you, McGee, right down the middle. We would have had special hat, special shirt made. Even special shorts, I wanted to see that. That would have been something.
It would have been crazy because I would have been in the locker room for Texas delivering a pregame speech and then helping Tim and Marcio scout. It would have been an amazing moment.
Well, your divided loyalties certainly would have been tested greatly during that. Hey, we've got Dan Madden coming up here in just a second. He's going to talk a little bit about some of the trademark issues. Have you read about this at all? Have you had time to pick that up off our Facebook page? And the
no,
Nick
I
now suing
me about it.
Yeah, Nick Lewin and his company, I say Nick Lewin, but it's actually his company that purchased the AVP out of bankruptcy that he created, which I still don't understand. But he did that, and now he is suing the city of Manhattan Beach and the Cuervo Tour for a variety of things, including trademark infringement, and claiming that the company, the AVP company, was deprived of money rightfully belonging to it. And he is suing the city for funds, based on the fact that the tournament looked like his tournament and feels that the AVP owns that trademark because they registered it, even though the city has owned the trademark for 51 years.
Wow, wow.
So it just seems to me that Nick Lewin continues to find new ways to inject himself in the volleyball universe, none of which have really worked out positively for him. And
now,
at
what point do you just go away, Barney?
Yeah, at what point do you just stay in New York, forget about the California beaches, be happy with your steroided out, muscled up goons out there and Snooki walking around the boardwalk. We have a strand. It's not made of wood. And, you know, just leave it at that. Enough already. Stop with it.
Oh,
you know?
Man.
If you have an East Coast stop, maybe you can show up. I'm sure you could still maybe hook up a ticket or something, but leave the rest out of it. We're going to bring it.
Yeah, we can give you a VIP pass.
Yeah, yeah. Just be happy with that. Don't try and get anything else out of anybody else. Let's bring into the show a guy that used to be on the show back in the heyday. This is a man who we initially went to because he was Danny Kinda. And we hired Danny Kinda and we got Dan Madden. But we love Dan Madden because of his expertise in this area. He's a graphic designer. He now works for our other friend Lindsay Breeden. And Dan Madden is back to producing some fantastic videos, the Kinda Good crew out with a new one called Explode. You can check out at kindagood.com. But Dan offered to come on and talk a little bit about the difference between the two logos, between the Cuervo logo and the AVP logo. And you can find a picture of that up on our Facebook page. Lots of people responding this morning to the picture of those two logos side by side as to whether those are actually the same logo. Welcome back into the Net Live once again, Dan Madden.
Yes. Thank you.
Hello, Dan.
My applause. No applause? All right, fine.
I know, I'm waiting for the applause, too. Hey, Danny, I love you, buddy. Kevin, I do got to go, so you can take this on your own. I will call you later, and let's pump up that show on Friday, man. It's going to be great.
Right on. Thanks, Geeter. We'll see you.
All right, guys. Tell Reed to stop being mad at me. Later.
Later.
See you, Geeter.
All right. So, Dan, we posted these two things up here. We have the AVP logo, which is done in yellow and black. We have the Cuervo logo, which is done in yellow and black, both with silhouettes of volleyball players. Talk to me about some of the differences here and what makes them not alike.
Okay, well, let's get right into it. AVP, when they did the rebranding back in 01, I believe, maybe it was 02, the reason they went with yellow and black, and this is straight from an AVP executive's mouth, not named Dave Williams, is because that was what Nissan wanted. And in fact, they ran into issues because they kind of went away from that to Budweiser for one tournament in Florida for 1 year, and Nissan said, no way, you're changing back to yellow and black. And now we have yellow and black again, which are colors I hate for beach volleyball. They are awful. They look terrible on sand. Black, everything just looks muddy. But the reason they're yellow and black again is because Jose Cuervo is yellow and black. It's just coincidence. And another thing,
okay,
the volleyball tournaments have been run by basically the same guy. Dave Williams ran the AVP events. He coordinated everything, the look and feel of the events, and he coordinated the look and feel of the Jose Cuervo events. Now, can you sue based on, like, a guy's ideas, like how he set up an event? I don't know. Anyway.
I don't think you can trademark event construction.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't think you could trademark colors.
No, you can't. But you know, you combine everything, and you see something fishy sometimes. But I don't think you can do anything more than say, "Huh? Yeah, I guess they look kind of similar, but they're the same. They're doing the same things. Of course, they're going to have similarities. It's just they look like logos from competing organizations." And I mean, I posted a few comments on your Facebook wall because when you put up the Cuervo logo next to the AVP logo, brilliant idea. You can see like, oh, okay, yeah, they look like pro beach volleyball logos.
but
I mean,
if you go in Google and you put in volleyball logo, you will find three dozen silhouetted hitters. You will find all kinds of different silhouetted hitters. It is not unique. If you drew your own silhouetted hitter, you have the rights to that one.
Exactly. And I bet you if you Google volleyball logos, you'll probably get more that look like the NBA logo than look like the AVP logo. NBA is not going to sue because they're not Nick Lewin. No, I have nicknames for these logos. The old AVP one I call the Rocketeer because it's kind of like, I don't know if he's jump surfing to the moon. I don't know what he's doing. He's just flying in outer space at some weird angle. The only way you can do it is if you have a jetpack strapped to your back. And the new one, the Jose Cuervo one, is drawn a little... It's drawn a little more humanist. Like if you're drawing like body forms, like in a figure drawing class, it's
yeah.
If
you had a Hyalai stick for a right arm, that's what it would look like.
yeah. I don't know. It's drawn a little more. Looks more like a human motion. It looks a little more fluid. So it's drawn a little better, with a little less detail. Like the right foot is just ridiculous. It's terrible looking. But I call that one the guy about to hug a volleyball logo, which is because he looks like he's about to hug a volleyball more than he's about to hit it.
Okay, so here's the lawsuit. It says that DFA PVA alleges that by hosting the Manhattan Beach Open, organizers created confusion, mistake, or deception as to the origin, sponsorship, or affiliation of the tournament, and has deprived the company of money that rightfully belongs to it. The suit also alleges the organizers used a confusingly similar imitation of the AVP logo to market the event, furthering the false impression that the AVP was the source of the tournament. Hey, DFAPVA, there's no confusion. We know the AVP went out of business, and you're no longer in business. That's been established.
Yeah, no one's getting tricked. They're not considering the whole lockup of everything. So the AVP just had the words AVP, or the letters AVP in lowercase, and the logo next to it. Jose Cuervo has his whole name. It's got its own logo. Its name is its logo, paired with Pro Beach Volleyball Series and the icon of the volleyball player. So those are entirely different looking lockups of an entire identity system. So, I mean, Lewin's being crazy. What he's doing is he's trying to extract money any way he can because he can't get it running tournaments anymore. There's just no way. I mean, you saw what Hans was able to put on. It was, you know, it was a far cry from what even Hans thought he could do, you know, on the May 15th deadline. So he knows he's screwed. He's just trying to get money. And then this is just the small stuff. The big stuff is the Manhattan Beach Open name. That's what he's trying to get the money from.
Well, and the issue there is that the AVP re-registered the trademark when it came due. But the discussion is, do they re-register it, and do they now have the rights to it, or do they simply re-register it as to a courtesy or as a courtesy to the organization they were working with and is in the city of Manhattan Beach? And it plays to some of the different issues. And the quote from the lawyer for Manhattan Beach said that registration to us doesn't take away the fact that we are the owners of the mark. We have common law rights to that mark. It's our event, not their event, and we will defend that. I believe that.
Roxanne,
city attorney.
You can say you have common law rights to it, but AVP did legitimately buy those rights because the city of Manhattan Beach did buy them, as far as I can tell from talking to Corey Glaive and reading the article. The city of Manhattan Beach did own those rights, and they let it lapse. And then Dave Williams said, hey, this is lapsing. Why don't we buy it? Now, whether or not he did it for the reasons he said in the article, or if he was a little more devious and sly about it, I don't know. But there's a person who's common to all this stuff, and now Dave Williams is in the middle of both sides, where he was the guy who bought it for the AVP, and now he's not being sued by this. He's part of Cuervo. He's part of USAV, IMG, Cuervo side, and in Manhattan Beach, and they're all getting sued by Lewis. So I got to know what Dave Williams is thinking now, because it's a savvy move for him to buy it in the first place. But that's where Nick Lewin has a leg to stand on, and he might win this one.
Well, he has a leg to stand on, but in the article here, there's a quote from the U.S. Trademark Office that says, referring to common law rights that arise from actual use of a mark, it said this may allow the common law user to successfully challenge a registration or application. So the fact that the city of Manhattan Beach has used it for 51 years under a variety of different monikers in association with a variety of different business partners, including Cuervo, including the AVP and its three different iterations, It all allows for the fact that the one constant has been the city of Manhattan Beach, and I would expect that that would, that 51-year history would probably defeat anyone's individual claim from a couple of years that they had rights to that trademark.
Well, of course, and AVP didn't have Manhattan Beach open in 2010. So depending on when in 2009 they got the rights to it, they might not even have ever run a tournament with the rights. So with the logo stuff and the branding stuff, there's no way. That's going to get thrown out. It's ridiculous. But this one, they have a little bit more. I don't know. But, you know, what Lewin's doing is he ran that tournament in Huntington at the end of in October, and he got money from Wilson because he was on contract and they had to run the tournament. And now he's just, like, trying to think of ways to get some of his investment back. And if that's suing, you know, that's suing. And, you know, this reminds me of, like, cyber squatters, guys who buy up website addresses, you know, back in the day. And when they had, like, McDonald's.com, you buy that before McDonald's, and McDonald's has to pay you to use their name, you know. That's
right.
That was like, and those guys are just sleaze.
You know, the corporation is claiming they want a jury trial, but I would expect that they would really like to have an insurance settlement is what they would like to have to avoid further legal costs. This sounds like kind of the exact problem that is plaguing the legal system in the United States. Dan, we appreciate you coming on and giving us your opinion on this. We know that beach volleyball is dear to your heart.
Oh, dear to my heart. Hey, congrats and good luck to Alex Jupiter. And it's the only time I'll ever root for USC in anything when they have Alex Jupiter playing for them. Anyway, thanks for having me on.
All right. Thanks, Dan Madden. Good to hear from you. Reed Pretty. It's
good stuff.
It's down to you and I.
I think Dan just accused Dave Williams of insider trading.
I don't know. Did he somehow profit off of AVP stock? That would be insider trading. Hey, decide itself. Go out to the NetLive Facebook page, the NetLive or facebook.com/thenetlive. We have a post up there. It's TNL. You make the call. It has the Cuervo Beach right next to the AVP logo. Give us a comment there. Lots of people already put some information up there. Give us your opinion on those two. Are they similar enough or different enough to make a difference? Rita, what I'd like to know is are you able to still defend your buddy Nick Lewin in the ongoing Barnett versus Pretty debate?
Well, I think Dan brings up a few interesting points, and it seems to me as I read through this article and hear what Dan was having to say that it kind of comes more down to the naming rights, which they may have a case versus the actual logo itself. You know, the Manhattan Beach Open, you know, the fact that that was renewal and Dave might, you know, had that knowledge or maybe was an employee of AVP when that happened. I mean, I don't know. It's obviously speculation at this point, but have some exposure to certain instances like this. It's important for businesses to try to protect things like naming rights. And of course the Manhattan Beach Open, I mean, that's enormous. Just like when we had James Lights on, I mean, he made reference to the fact that it was their goal to brand each individual tournament. And so I could see them, you know, trying to establish rights to those names and developing an entire brand around it. Just like you see IMG doing with the U.S. Open of Surfing. You can guarantee there's not going to be a competitor that can tournament surf contest on that beach anywhere close to those that same name. So I don't know. It's extremely interesting, and I'm curious to follow it.
Well, we'll keep following. We'll keep you updated as to the results of that. I'm sure there'll be much more reporting on and around that particular event. Reed, we're going to take a little bit of break, do some business here, and when we come back, we're going to talk to you about your men's national team finish out there at World Cup, if you have just a few more minutes. So hang in there, everybody. Kevin Barnett, Reed Pretty, holding down the net live here on a Tuesday. We'll be right back.
Volleyball Mag, the industry's number one volleyball magazine. Volleyball Magazine has been serving the volleyball community for over 20 years with the latest in volleyball news and information, product reviews, athlete profiles, fitness, health, and travel-related features. It's published 9 times a year. Volleyball Magazine brings you the inside to the access to the sport's biggest stars. Whether you're interested in the junior, collegiate, or professional level, sand or indoor, Volleyball Magazine has you covered both on and off the court. Visit us now. Do it. www.volleyballmag.com and subscribe for 1 year for only $19.99. Do that now and receive a new water bottle, a $49 value, free compliments of our friends at Naturally Energized Water Bottle Company. Volleyball Mag, the industry's number one volleyball magazine.
Welcome back into the net live here on the volleyballnetwork.com. Come on and say yes to Dan Madden. We had him back, so we got to bring back his song. Dan Madden, you are Justin Bieber. You just don't know it. Hit that high note, my man. It's one of my kids' favorite songs, Dan. Thanks very much for being here. We've had a great show so far. Heard from Chris Geeter McGee, Mike Sonheimer. We've talked to Tim Jensen from Pepperdine University about their run to the Elite Eight. Talked about the NCAA tournament, the upcoming finals between UCLA and FSU and Illinois and USC. The Final Four going to be occurring in San Antonio coming up Thursday night, 7 and 9 p.m. Central Time, and then followed up by the final match, 8:30 on Saturday night, also from San Antonio. The Net Live will be there 2 p.m. Central on Friday. We're going to go 2 to 5 Central Time. That's 12 to 3 for those of you who can't do math here on the West Coast. We are going to be on the air. It's going to be a great show. We're endeavoring to get all four of the Final Four coaches on air. By that time, of course, there will be two winners and two losers. We also have a variety of other guests, as it is the greatest gathering of volleyball coaching talent in the entire world, really. You don't find that much talent in one room in any other place except for at this convention every single year. And remember, if you're in San Antonio, don't be afraid to come by our booth. You got to visit and see the Net Live booth and hear our show. And then you also get a chance, if you want to enter, the 64-person Net Live Mizuno Trivia Shootout, which is going to happen at 5 o'clock immediately following the show right there in the main convention hall. So we hope you get a chance to attend there. Reed Pretty won't be there, but he's with us now. He's out in Russia. He's gotten back to his club team. He's come back from the World Cup. I've had a chance to finally do the World Cup and finish up with that. Sixth place finish by the United States with a 6-5 record. There seem to be issues abounding, but before we get to that, let's talk to Reed Pretty about his reaction from the tournament itself.
Lots of reactions, I guess. You know, it's, you remember that tournament, 11 matches, 14 days. And, you know, I think you can pick up a lot. You know, we just didn't play well. And we weren't able to play together. We weren't able to complement each other. And unfortunately, given that, quote, strength of schedule in the beginning, that could have gone either way. We could have, you know, started off on a better note and really caught momentum that would have carried us, I think, through, which is kind of what we did last time, even though we had the hiccup against Puerto Rico. You know, by beating Brazil 3-0, we really got off to a great start there, and it kind of carried us through. But
yeah, you guys had Brazil and Russia in two of your first three matches.
Right, and then followed by Italy within two matches from that. And after that Italian match, it was kind of mathematically impossible, you know, all but impossible, I guess, to qualify. And so it kind of changes the mood of the tournament. And of course, you want to try to take ground as a team each match. But, you know, having only being done halfway through the tournament and kind of being out of it is not fun. And so, yeah, I mean, there was, amidst a lot of stuff that we would like to redo and improve on and overhaul, I think there were some notable performances. I think Clay Stanley, two reactions to his play. One, it's the best I've seen him play. I've played with him for 11 years now, and he, hands down, was the best I've seen him play. He was doing everything. He was serving well, playing defense, stuffing seven balls a game, match, and just tremendous range and step close. You know that Clay has a tendency sometimes to kind of wait for the ball to come to him. I mean, he was just exploding to the ball and hitting with a ton of range. And the other thing is he's wearing the captain's bar now, and he's a very reserved person, especially in groups. And I've really seen a concerted effort for him to step up in that role, and he was very vocal and was just a great leader for all of us. And it's great to see that. You remember playing with him, and you kind of wanted more from him from that standpoint. So that was very good to see.
Yeah, I think Clay was definitely the biggest bright spot. And you mentioned the offense. Look, he's had the offense for a long time, and that definitely was improved. I thought Clay in off-ball situations was better than he's been previously. But the defense was the biggest deal. Clay is playing his position. He's picking up tips. He's digging balls. He can handle the ball whenever called upon. Really just an all-around fantastic performance from Clay, and really Clay continuing to be Clay in that when the chips are down, the man shows up and he is ready to go. It's amazing. Clay will be kind of up and down all season, but then he will, as soon as the chips are really down, it's a World Championships, it's a World Cup, it's an Olympic Games. He's now the Olympic defending MVP from 2008. I mean, just a great performance from him. I want to bring Brandon Rosenthal back into this conversation. Brandon, we're talking about the men's national team and their World Cup. We're talking to Reed about their experience there. Appreciate you coming back. And DJ Roche, I saw you there, buddy. Get back on there. We'll get DJ Roche back in the conversation. Coming to us from, I think, where is he, Dubai? Or Oman? Or I can't remember what country he is in currently. But, Reed, you mentioned that there were some other notable performances. For me, the other big notable performance was that of Matt Anderson, a young outside hitter, 24-year-old out of Penn State. I thought he had a fantastic tournament overall for a young guy really coming into his own.
Yeah, he carries a huge offensive load for us and also a passing load. A lot of teams will just target him specifically and serve him a ton of balls, and his numbers have really held up over time, and so he's definitely carrying a big load and able to do so. He's pretty devastating out of the middle of the court, the BIC pipe, and so and he also has it's not as probably consistent as he would like it or the team would like it, but his serve is incredibly it's a point scoring weapon, and hopefully in Italy he'll continue to hit that serve and be able to bring it back this summer. I also thought Riley Salmon, back in the mix, he suited up in an outside hitter uniform and in a libero uniform. And you remember playing with Riley. He's a spark, and he's got that something that people want to play for him. And he's, he has the ability to affect those around him without really even doing, the volleyball action, so to speak. And the fact that he can do that well is he can also – he's also a great volleyball player. It just makes him that much more valuable to have in the mix and on such a long trip.
Yeah, what's Riley up to for the wintertime?
I think he signed a deal in Puerto Rico as an outside hitter. He's going to be playing there, and I think there's some other opportunities out there for him because Puerto Rico is a very short league. And so I think he'll have an opportunity maybe to pick up on another team for the playoffs.
Now, have his knees come back around? Because my understanding was that his knees were kind of hurting, and that's why he was looking at a change to libero.
Riley's in a good spot, man. He can do whatever you ask him. If Allen wants him to be as an outside hitter, I think there's every reason to believe that he can do that well at the highest level. And it's you know, with Riley, there's that when he plays within himself and does the chip chisel, the smart play, get it back, you know, puts his team in good positions, plays unbelievable defense, and is actually a very good blocker. You know, he can do what you ask him. And when you put him also on a trip, you know, if Rich was to go down for any reason, you'd have somebody that could play the libero position really well right there.
Reed, give me an idea of just the team dynamics. Obviously, you guys are together for a good bit of time now, and now everybody kind of goes their own separate way. And leading into 2012, where you know it's in an Olympic year, what kind of give me the time frame and how you see things moving forward towards August.
You know, it's been kind of a disappointing 3 years, to be honest, with the national team. And I think everyone's feeling it. Everybody wants to be in a better position, but we continually are kind of dropping in the world rankings, and I think rightfully so. I think we all believe that there's potential within this group and just trying to figure out how to realize it. And so, you know, this break of 5 months could be beneficial because you have all 14 guys and even the guys that weren't with us on that trip, you know, you've got all 20 guys in leagues gaining experience, and these are match experience with pressure involved. And, you know, guys like Max Holt are going to be playing a lot of volleyball and in big matches. He plays for a team in Italy where, you know, the league's a great league with a lot of good teams. And so the more that we all have these experiences, I think the better. And, you know, we'll see. You know, Cuba and Puerto Rico. Puerto Rico is hosting this tournament in May, the next qualifier, and it was a strategy of them to have their own league finish early so that they could train together and prepare for that, knowing that the rest of us, especially the USA, was going to be off in their foreign clubs and probably regroup for maybe 10 to 14 days before this event. And then you've got Cuba, on the other hand, who doesn't allow their players to be released. They're going to be training for the next 6 months together. So, you know, I think it could be a good thing, like I said, with guys really gaining the really valuable experience and learning more about the international game. Hopefully everyone just stays healthy when we reconvene in May, and hopefully we just can put it all together at the right time.
Reed, I'm going to throw in what my thoughts were on the tournament here in just a couple of minutes, but I wanted to get your reaction to some of the names that weren't on the roster. You mentioned, of course, that there are other guys in the gym. 14 go on the trip, but there's 20 guys in the gym. Who are some of those guys you think have the possibility to improve over the next 6 months? And if they're not in the Norseca event, the next qualifier, which occurs immediately after everyone returns, basically May 11th in Puerto Rico, maybe they'll have a chance to make that final Olympic roster. Who are some of the names that you think can challenge for positions, or we should maybe expect to see on a match or two?
I think four names come to mind right off the top of my head, and there's probably more. But you know, Scott Tyszynski is still very much in the mix in my mind. He's a very solid outside hitter, but for the same reason that he made the 2008 team, I think he has the potential to make the 2012 team. Hopefully there is a team to make, first of all. I mean, qualifying is going to be no joke, so I don't want to take that for granted. But when you talk about, you know, there's two philosophies, I guess. You know, one is pick an all-star team, pick the best 12 players in the nation and go compete. The other idea is what Hugh put together in 2008, which was I'm just going to pick the 12 players that form the best team.
Yeah.
And so the ability to be a role player and the ability to make those around you better was almost more valuable than what numbers you were, you know, displaying day in and day out. And I think Scott Tyszynski keeps himself in the mix because every single day he's able to be a spark plug to whatever team he's playing on. I think other guys on that list would be Dave McKenzie has resurfaced on the national team and in that opposite position. He's doing, you know, he's got great experience. If you remember, we've talked about it a few times, the ability he has to come off the bench and put in a tough serve and play some defense If you put him in an opposite situation, he's going to change the look. He's not going to be a high ball banger. He's going to hit the ball fast and with range, and you know, he's going to bring a ton of wood. Dave Smith is a middle blocker from UCI who is just really steady, and his numbers have been phenomenal in every training block we've had. So I know that he's giving the coaches a hard thing to think about. And then, you know, at the setting position, you got John Winder and Donnie Sujo that weren't on this trip and I think are still very, very much a part of the equation.
All right, I want to bring into conversation a guy that we haven't heard from in a little while, but he's joining us now from another place we've never had a caller from. Where are you, DJ Roche? Is it United Arab Emirates? I can't even remember where you are.
I am not. I am in Doha, Qatar.
Doha, Qatar.
Yep,
out there DJing for a prince of some sort?
The Arab, the 2011 Arab Games.
Oh, the Arab Games. You got some volleyball going on, or what events are you at?
There is, for all the experience I have in sports, you would think I'd be doing volleyball or basketball, but I am doing the aquatic center. I will be doing all the swimming events.
Oh, very nice. I didn't know there was a big contingent that was into swimming. You don't hear them as contenders there in the Olympic Games very often.
You know, I'm under the impression that the caliber of competition here is not going to be that fantastic, but my competition doesn't start until Saturday, so I'll have to call you next Monday and let you know.
All right, so you're just hanging out there, going to the malls, enjoying your excellent hotel room?
Yes, I am looking out of my hotel room right now at the Persian Gulf. Next to, there's a building next to me that's under construction that apparently is going to now be the tallest building in the world whenever they're finished with it. And, you know, I'm just, you know, living in the lap of luxury that I'm used to.
Very nice. Well, Reed is in a shack in Russia, but he's joining us, and we're talking a bit about the men's national team here and their sixth-place finish.
Now, so is everybody basically calling to the home court to be on the show today? Is that what's happening?
Yeah, because I'm in the home court. Geeter is traveling around Los Angeles because he has no heat in his house. Rosenthal was kind enough to join us. He's going to be on the program on Friday. Reed, of course, is in Russia. Sondheimer called in. It's just me and a bunch of call-ins, basically.
Most call-ins we've ever had.
Could be. Could be. Since our callers don't call, we have to call in ourselves and make it feel like people are listening to the program.
That's right. It was nice to hear.
And if it makes you feel any better... Yeah, thanks. And, you know, if it makes you feel any better, Kevin did gaff the intro music.
Nice. Well, it just makes me look that much better when he does stuff like that.
That's what
we actually played at where you are, Jamie, in the Club World Championships in October.
Nice.
That huge facility right next to, you know what's funny is you got to make sure you check out Krispy Kreme Donuts. They're very authentic there in Doha.
I will definitely do that for sure.
Very nice. Well, hey, Reed, how do you feel the team is functioning coming out of that tournament? Of course, a frustrating performance. I know you guys have higher expectations than sixth. Do you feel like the group is on the same page, or is there some work to do in off the court related manner?
I think there's no question that we have a lot of work to do. In every sense, and I think that's what, you know, that's what's ahead of us. And I think when we come back in May, every day is going to be extremely important. And I know several players, and I'm sure the coaching staff as well, have acquired their own video database, and you know, are going to be spending some extra time between now and May, just looking through tape and trying to identify where we can be better. So it's kind of, you know, an all hands on deck situation, and you know, we would like to be great year in and year out, you know, especially following the 2008 games, but that just hasn't been the reality. So it, you know, we hope we can get hot and have it all come together here in the summer.
Well, hey, Reed, I know you're over there in Russia. You're gonna have a lot of time on your hands. I've been starting to watch on Netflix The Walking Dead and Sons of Anarchy. I think you ought to check those two out.
I appreciate it. I will. Anytime we have some new media out here, it's always appreciated. And, you know, I should probably get off the line so you could actually give your real opinion on the national team.
Yeah, we don't want you to have to respond to that hot mess that's coming out in seconds. So, hey, we appreciate you joining us. Good luck in your match tomorrow, and we'll look forward to talking to you, if not on the show on Friday, certainly on the next Monday show.
All right, thanks, guys.
All right, thanks,
Jeremy. Have fun out there. Rosenthal, right, have fun at the event. And make sure you bring shirts wherever you go.
I have shirts from Jeremy. He brought over a box. We're going to be bringing those down to San Antonio. Thanks, of course, to Hurley. All right, thanks, Reader. See you later.
All right, thanks, guys.
Hey, a little information on the qualification route. Brandon asked Reed about it briefly. It's May 11th through 20th in Puerto Rico. The United States will be in the Norseca Zone Championships. It works like this. The three teams that finished top three at World Cup are already qualified. On the men's side of the game, that's Poland, Russia, and Brazil. They are in the Olympic Games with the host Britain. That's four teams total. You will then have five teams from the World Zone Championships, which will all occur around that May date. It varies a little bit, but all around, you know, early springtime. The United States out of Norseca. I expect the United States and Cuba will face off for that spot. I don't think Puerto Rico will be much of a factor. It's possible, but I think it's unlikely. USA and Cuba are going to duel it out, and you heard Reed mention the fact that both Cuba and Puerto Rico will have time together as full teams, certainly a lot more time together than the United States will in preparation for that May event. Out of the South American zone, I expect it to be Argentina with Brazil gone. Out of the African zone, I would expect Egypt to come out of the African zone, although Tunisia has been a power at times. I think that their instability sociopolitically is going to cause some problems for their team. They have not been playing well lately. In the Asian zone, Iran, the surprise team of the World Cup, had some great victories, 3-2 over Serbia, 3-2 over Poland. I'd expect them to come out of that Asian zone. Interesting that they play in the Asian zone, for those of you that didn't know the map. In the European zone, with Poland and Russia having qualified, Italy and Serbia shaping up to be the favorites there. So that'll be five teams. That'll be a nine total. That will leave three spots available for qualification, and that will happen in a variety of tournaments. There are three tournaments happening in Japan, Italy, and Germany, all in the first week of June, June 8th through the 10th for Italy and Germany, June 2nd through the 10th for Japan. That's in conjunction with the Asian Championship. That will be happening, and the winner of each of those tournaments will then qualify, and that will give you your field of 12. So should the United States fall to Cuba or Puerto Rico at Norseca, they would then play in one of those tournaments, the 8th through the 10th. I would expect if they do get to that point, which they have not in the last four cycles, the United States winning the Norseca event the last four times, I would expect the United States to get a pretty good seed into one of those events, but you still must win the tournament. The United States very much in danger of not qualifying for the very first time. Brandon and DJ Roche, I don't know what thoughts you had on some of what Reed had said or what parts of the show you've heard so far before I go ahead and give my opinion and wrap up of the national team and World Cup.
No, I think one question I do have, and this probably goes for a lot of sports, is when a host country is not traditionally a power or even fields a really good team. I mean, is there any? Do you have any knowledge of what Britain is going to field as far as a volleyball program?
I'd expect them to do what Greece did with their softball program. I think about the women's side and the softball team where they were pulling in people that had any connection at all to Greece. And I think Great Britain will do the same. Anyone who has any connection at all to Great Britain who is of any talent whatsoever will join the team. But I don't expect them to be a factor even to the effect that Australia was. Australia, not a strong team, but developed a pretty good men's program in preparation for the 2000 games. And their women's program had a little bit of success under the tutelage of an American coach before that event. But I don't expect Great Britain to even approach that level. Unfortunately, volleyball is a sport that's big worldwide anywhere they don't speak English. So I would expect Great Britain to not factor in the medals. Let me talk a little bit about my opinion. Reed mentioned some of the people there. Clay, I thought Clay had a fantastic tournament. He is the opposite. He's my opposite, man, until he doesn't show up at a big tournament the way he did. He's just turning into a fantastic, complete player. I think Matt Anderson, talked about Matt Anderson briefly. Matt Anderson is on track now. I was concerned about him coming out of 09, didn't have a great season, had an okay 10. I thought this season overall, not just in the tournament, he's had a really good year. I look forward to the development of Matt Anderson for next year. He is that big stick on the left the U.S. has been searching for a number of years. If you look at the middle blockers, Russell Holmes, big bright spot, played a lot, played instead of David Lee, instead of Ryan Millar at times. I think he's just a hard worker, a steady player, somebody that you really can put in there and know what you're going to get from him. I thought Rich Lamborn was pretty solid at libero. I thought Riley Salmon also came in and played well. You could even look at Riley Salmon at that outside hitter position, and then you're able to sub him in for a Matt Anderson across the back row. I think you may look at that role, that double DS role that the United States women have used with Stacey Sakura and Laura Davis at times. I think that is a definite possibility, something that you could look at if you're Allen Knipe. Or if you're the head coach. I think Allen Knipe, really, he has been behind this entire quad, and I think he continues to be behind. And I think the performance of his team shows that. And Allen Knipe has got a long winter here where he has to figure out what he's doing with his personnel. Reed talked about roles. Roles are important. It's nice to have a bunch of volleyball talent, but you have to have people who can fill roles. I have not seen Sean Rooney come in and play well off the bench. I've seen Sean Rooney play well as a starter. But is he going to be a starter on that team? Barring injury, no. He's not going to beat out Pretty or Anderson at that outside hitter spot. So maybe you need to look at finding someone who is a good backup off-the-bench type of player. Is that player a Tuzinski? Do you carry Tuzinski and Salmon to steady up your passing because you have Pretty and Anderson out there at the outside and you hope that they stay healthy? What about a Paul Lottman? I thought Lottman did a great job coming in serving, something that they tried Evan Paddock at, and Evan Paddock just has not performed. He's the backup opposite. He has not performed it as that serving sub. I think Paul Lottman performs pretty well as a serving sub, and he also can dig some balls. Will you see some of these other names come in? Winder, where has he gone? I asked this question rhetorically because I got some other response about, oh, he's been in the gym, he's been doing this or that from one of our listeners. Said, look, I know he's been in there, but you don't see him on rosters. He made the World Championships last year and appeared and played decently, but you have not seen him consistently, and I wonder why. Will Don Sujo be back in the mix? Is Carson Clark an option for a change of pace at that opposite spot? Do you put him behind Clay Stanley rather than Evan Paddock, who is Clay Jr.? Do you bring in a left-handed, fast-hitting opposite player to give that opportunity to run the double sub? Jason Jablonski, a name I keep hearing thrown about because he's playing well at Pan American Games and some of these other things. I think he's kind of wholly unremarkable at a lot of stuff, but will the coaching staff think differently and put him in there? Scott Tuzinski, as mentioned, a fantastic team guy. And when you're constructing a team, you love guys like Scott Tuzinski on your roster, not just for the volleyball, for the other stuff. That's so important. And then Dave McKenzie. I thought it was interesting to hear that name come back. David Smith in the mix. But Dave McKenzie, I think if he's matured a lot, we know physically he can get it done. There is no doubt. Sixth place, 6-5, an unacceptable finish for the United States men, and certainly going to be the talk in the boardroom at USA Volleyball and with the coaching staff over the next 6 months as they try and prepare for Olympic qualification. Disappointing. Very, very disappointing. I know for everyone involved, we certainly know Allen Knipe and Gary Sato are working as hard as they can and as hard as they know and as well as they know in order to try and make this team better. But the results of sixth place, the worst finish in the last four cycles of this event and Olympic qualification, certainly is not going to get it done for the U.S. men.
Barnett.
Yes, sir.
Question with, you know, you're talking about the off season and what Knipe has to do as far as, you know, put together a team. And, you know, I think probably the best scenario or comparison is, you know, a dream team in basketball and what Coach K did, you know, with getting people to play roles. And, you know, obviously every guy that you talked about is tremendous at their position. But, you know, the idea of coming in off the bench and playing or serving one time or this, that, or the other, you know, comes in huge. And you know, just with your experience, how much does that affect the team, you know, moving forward into the Olympic, you know, tournament?
How much do the roles affect?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the roles are extremely important. I think there needs to be some focus on that. Thanks, BJ Evans. Yes, Nicole Davis. I'm sorry, I said Laura Davis. I'm mixing up my personnel there. Nicole Davis, of course, from the women's national team. No, I think that the roles are extremely important. I think it's something that has to be addressed, and I've seen it with other teams where you just took a whole bunch of talent, you didn't take a team. And you had guys that could have been some glue, and a whole bunch of talent doesn't get it done. Just go back and look at the tapes of the 2000 Olympic team. The men's national team, incredibly talented. When you talk about George Romaine, Mike Lambert, Loy Ball, Dan Landry, Jeff Nygaard, I mean, just an incredibly talented team, but not a very good team. It didn't function well as a team, and I think that's important. You heard Reed mention it. mention the composition that Hugh McCutchen chose for 2008, and that was the best team. You take a Scott Tuzinski, you take a Tom Hoff, because their leadership on and off the court, their leadership off the court is so important in a tournament like World Cup, where it's 11 matches in 14 days, and then you have the Olympic Games, which is playing every other day for 2 weeks, and the pressure involved in that. Leadership and those qualities that make life easier off the court are vital to the success of any team, not just the raw volleyball talent. Because when we're talking about volleyball talent, we're criticizing people at this level. We're talking about very, very small differences. And obviously, we're all aware, I am keenly aware, if you put any one of these guys in any gym except the USA gym, they are a god compared to anyone else in that gym. Okay, outside of maybe some of their professional teams. But you move these guys around, they are much better than anyone else who would be around. But when you put them in that gym, you must be evaluated in that talent pool of the U.S. national team. And we didn't even talk about the setting. If there's one issue that's the biggest problem with the men's team, it's the setting. Kevin Hansen played very well in 2008 as the backup to Lloyd Ball. Had a fantastic tournament. Very important person to the success at that tournament. He has not matured in the last 3 years to the level necessary to pin down the starting position. And that's evidenced by the fact that Brian Thornton is in the matches the majority of the time. And I'm sorry, Brian Thornton is 6'3". He is not terribly athletic. He cannot run. He is a blocking liability at the net. He is not digging enough balls defensively. He is not up to national team standards at the setting position. I keep hearing about how smart he is and what a knowledgeable kid he is as far as the game. All that's well and good. But if you're going to be a hole at the net, which I don't think is a deal killer, but if you're going to be a hole at the net and a hole defensively, you had better be able to deliver the ball with incredible precision. And Brian Thornton is simply not doing that, especially to the left-hand side, and he struggled the entire tournament with establishing a middle attack. You heard Reed Pretty talk about the Bic attack from Matt Anderson as a powerful weapon. It's a powerful weapon with Reed himself, but only when you can establish a middle attack. And if you watch that Russia match, Russia knew that there was no middle attack, and they ganged up on that Bic and shut it down and took away a vital part of the U.S. offense, and that's because the U.S. setting cannot get the ball to the middle effectively enough, often enough, to make it a weapon. And if there is one thing that has to be solved here if the United States is going to qualify, it's setting. Here, I don't care if it's Winder, Sujo, I don't care if it's Thornton or Hansen. Figure it out and get somebody in there who is up to snuff and going to make a difference at the setting spot. That's the prescription for success in the upcoming year, period. Sorry to end it on a note like that, guys. Not a lot of question in that, but had to get that off my chest after watching 11 matches of some pretty awful setting.
You feel better about yourself now, don't you?
No, I don't. Not about me. I feel better in general. It doesn't really affect me.
Barnett, how much does, the progression of the women's program and the decline of the men's program and just the expectations of them both kind of hurt the men right here?
It hurts the veterans more. It hurts those individuals that played for Hugh McCutchen much more, because they felt like under Hugh McCutchen they had built something. And Hugh McCutchen met resistance and did not have great results in the World Cup event himself. Finished fourth, dropped the match late, could have qualified. But in that 2007 year, you heard that those guys were kind of on the same page. You heard that everyone was going a direction, and that team seemed to have direction. This group doesn't seem to have that same energy and direction. And when you couple that with the results, that's a problem. And I think that goes all the way back to Hugh McCutchen was building something, a way to play USA volleyball, a way to represent your team every day in practice, not just in the matches. And for the men that saw that and were a part of building that special team and a part of that 2008 team, and I don't just mean the players who actually went to the games, but the players who were a part of that success, because it extends beyond the 12 who get medals. It extends all the way down to the 20, the guys who were in the gym, who prepped that team, who competed for spots, and everyone who made that group what it was. And that's 20 people in the gym. That's not just 12. It extends all the way to those guys and the feeling of what they had built and that they were on the cusp of something great that was going to be incredible for a very long time. to watch that slip away and to watch that go across the gym and stay in your same building, and then to watch that same system continue to evolve and continue to have success and win Grand Prix and nearly win World Cup and just have that atmosphere taken from you and put across the gym is awful. It is a jilted lover, and you're watching your former lover make out with their new beau across the gym. It's just not good for anybody involved, except the women's team and Hugh McCutcheon, who's continuing to have success. But it's not good for anyone on the men's side. And it's not good for Allen Knipe to have to follow that and then have to deal with that issue and deal with those players who were a part of that. I think it's a very difficult situation for Allen Knipe to come to the international game with basically no knowledge of the international game and to have to follow a gold medal performance and what was really the beginning of the peak, not a long, sustained success. The U.S. peaked at just the right moment to take down that gold medal. It wasn't something that they had long, sustained success. They were fourth at the same event a year out from the Olympics and then went on to win World League and then on to win the Olympic Games. So it's very tough on the veteran players and I think on the current coaching staff of the men's team. Getting a little long-winded here for you guys. Jeremy, what time is it where you're at? Got to be evening.
It is 10:45 for me.
Oh, that's it, huh? I got to look at the map.
I am 11 hours ahead of you.
All right. Very good. And Brandon, of course, on the East Coast, East Coast time.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you know, the real trouble of this Final Four being in San Antonio is you're going to have to visit the central time zone, which you really struggle with.
My former home. I love the central time zone. Everything's on at 7 o'clock. You know, primetime starts at 7. News is on at 10. I can't be awake at 11 o'clock after I see local news. It's far too late. 11 o'clock is late to stay up when you've been going all day, you know, preparing volleyball materials and playing video games. But anyway, hey, I want to remind everybody that we're going to have a show on Friday, 2 p.m. Central. I'll figure out what time it is, hopefully show up on time. 2 p.m. Friday, 2 to 5. Going to be a three-hour blowout, lots of coaches, lots of info. Get the feel from the convention. Going to be a lot of fun. If you're going to be at convention, stop by. Come by and check out our booth. We're going to be in the hall. It's going to be a lot of fun. The hall, the broadcast should be right up by one of the main courts. Going to be great. And then following our broadcast, we're going to get started hopefully about 5:15, the trivia contest, the NetLive Mizuno Trivia Shootout. Big thanks to Mizuno for sponsoring this event. We're giving away an iPad 2 to the winner. Get a show up. It's a 64-team volleyball bracket. You have to answer some volleyball trivia. So get yourself out there on Wikipedia and get ready. I want to give a big thanks to Volleyball Magazine for their involvement with us. They're doing a lot to promote this event coming up this weekend. The AVCA for getting us there and for their continuing support of the College Volleyball Weekly. We heard from Mike Sondheimer this week. Big thanks to Hurley for our shirts. We will have shirts on hand. Jeremy, can I talk to Nicole Ray and get some more before I go? Is that possible?
Yeah, absolutely. I was just worried about you having to carry all that stuff with you.
Yeah, how many do I have?
You have 5 of each color in every single size.
Ooh.
Jeremy, once he gets to San Antonio, you don't have to worry about him having to carry anything because he just basically schleps everything to me that has to do with what he calls talents work. And
yes, he expects you to be there an hour before him, set up, go to the bank, get cash so you can have change for the shirts and be ready to go.
No doubt.
Yeah, and batteries for the microphones if we had Geeter on hand. But
yes, Geeter doesn't know how to change batteries, so we have to do that for him.
We're excited to bring on Spire Institute and Mizuno starting in January as sponsors of this program. Thanks to them for getting behind our show. Guys, any final thoughts as we head off to the convention, NCAA tournament? Brandon, we got your picks. You're picking UCLA and Illinois in the Zoolander Showdown.
I'm pretty pumped to be in that atmosphere, to be in the mix. I think the matches are going to be great. I think Sandy, you know, brought up a great point. You've had some really competitive matches. It's a lot of fun when you see teams go 3-2, especially, you know, at that point. And, thought is you're going to see at least one five-set match in this, you know, Final Four grouping.
Well, I hope so, because there were a couple of blowouts last time we were there, and it didn't make for very exciting volleyball. I think that's going to be good. Jeremy, have a great time. Get that Christmas.
I will. You enjoy the Final Four, and wish I could be there, but got to do what I got to do.
Hey, keep making that money. Make that paper, baby. All right. Thanks, Jeremy. We'll see you later.
Yep. Later.
All right, Brandon Rosenthal, thanks very much for tuning in. We'll look forward to hearing from you on Friday. Appreciate
all
your
time. See you in a couple days.
All right, sounds good. Brandon Rosenthal is out of here. Big thanks to Mike Sondheimer for coming on the show early on, talking about his picks. He's got UCLA and USC. Rosenthal has UCLA and Illinois facing off in the final. And Tim Jensen from Pepperdine, thanks for coming on. Congratulations on a good run to the Elite Eight. Sorry we won't see you in the Final Four, but Jensen picking UCLA and Illinois to make it with UCLA as the national champion. You've been listening to The Net Live here on thevolleyballnetwork.com. Appreciate you being here. I'm Kevin Barnett. We will see you on Friday.